Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get one-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to episode 219 of Positively Trek. My name is Barry DeFord, and I am joined by my co-host of this lovely podcast, Mr. Dan Gunther. How you doing, Dan?
Hey, Barry. Not too bad. Excited, of course, as always, to talk Trek.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting one because it's been a little bit of a slow Trek news week, but we've got a few things to talk about, I think.
Definitely. There was actually another piece to the news that I just realized, and, you know, talking Positively Trek and everything, there's another little news feature I'm going to add to it that I've just realized that I should have brought up in the pre-recording, but we ended up talking about a bunch of stuff. So it's been a week nonetheless. I don't know. Are you feeling good about the possibility of what the Lower Decks finale will bring? I haven't seen it myself, and depending on when this releases, I don't know if it'll be out yet or if it is out.
Well, it is. It will be coming out a couple days after, or actually, sorry, the day after this episode drops. We are getting the Lower Decks season 4 finale. Or season 3 finale. I'm getting ahead of myself there. Wow. and of course, on that same day, we'll drop episode 11 of Star Trek Prodigy. So yeah, a couple things to look forward to this week. Yeah, very excited. I think they set up some interesting stuff for the finale for Lower Decks. Excited. We know the title. It's called The Stars at Night, which makes sense given what we learned in the previous episode. Oddly enough, that just makes me think of the Pee Wee Herman scene, Pee Wee's Big Adventure, where he's in Texas and he's on the phone.
My grandma.
Hello, Daddy. It's me, Pee Wee.
Where are you calling from?
Texas.
Where?
Honest. Listen, I'll prove it.
The stars at night are big and bright.
The only thing I ever think of now, whenever I think of Pee Wee Herman, is Large Marge. She yes. scared me more than anything when she, that transformation just, to this day, I won't watch it. It petrifies me.
Oh, wow.
Now, I have to say, not necessarily in the same vein. I've never been petrified like that, but that's the topic of today. We're going to be talking some horror genre Star Trek, and Star Trek does do horror, and it doesn't do it terribly bad. I would say they do better, you know, kind of space exploration-y, Strange New World stuff. But when they want to get freaky, they definitely have the ability to do it. So I think we can have a good conversation about that in light of the fact that we are approaching Halloween very, very quickly.
Yeah.
Are you going to dress up?
Well, we did actually have a little Halloween party just this past weekend, which I was able to make it to. And it was after work that I had to go to the party. So I had to make it simple. I do have a Starfleet medical tunic, the or sciences/medical from the Star Trek Picard season 1 Starfleet uniforms. I couldn't find the right badge. I have it somewhere and I couldn't find it. So I had to slap a Lower Decks badge on there, and I just wore it with my jeans because I came from work. So it was low effort, but I at least wore something.
I gotta say, I have the 1960s Command captain's uniform, so basically Kirk's outfit from I have the season 3 onward, so it's definitely kind of more of that mustardy color.
Yeah,
but that with a pair of jeans ain't bad.
Yeah,
so, you know, like, to be honest, and the fact that you threw a Lower Decks badge on there does sort of fit, I would say, in the sense you're like, eh, I'm in uniform. What do you want, boss? kind of thing. So I appreciate that. That's a good little MacGyver moment.
Yeah, I did throw there's three pips on it. I did consider taking two off so I could be like, oh, I'm an ensign. That's why the lower decks. But I didn't want to be less than a commander. What can I say?
I can understand that. I wouldn't go lower than a commander, though. I do want to get because I do have a Voyager era Star Trek uniform, and I did have a Picard or a TNG one from back in the day, but it's had its time. Mm. They do fall apart eventually, I guess.
Yeah.
But I want to get one of the little black pips on the inside so I can be like a lieutenant commander or something like that.
I love lieutenant commander, even just like visually, it's striking. I like that it's a little different. You know, that hollow pip can really make an ensemble come together.
yeah, it builds. I like it so much. Like captain, four pips, great. That's all wonderful. But anyways, We digress. I look forward to wearing my costume on Halloween. And I feel bad, though. A lot of my fellow staff members will often remark to me like, oh, hey, we should do like a staff. Everyone wear the same uniform. Like, oh, hey, we're all going to do 101 Dalmatians or something like that. And every year I'm always that guy who's like, no, I'm wearing my Star Trek uniform. And they're like, come on, Barry. And I'm like, no, I paid really good money for this thing, so no.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I get that. You know, those uniforms look sharp. You know,
they do.
There are very few times where it's socially acceptable to wear a Starfleet uniform out in public, just in the general population. So when Halloween comes around, you've got to take advantage of that time. There's no other option, I think.
I've literally got out and rebatteried my communicator.
Very nice.
Anyways, let's get on to the rest of the news here. I had to jump in on the Lower Decks finale chat there, but what else do we got in the news? Do you see there, Mr. Dan?
Well, we do have a Paramount Plus announcement of their launch dates for a few countries: France, Germany, Switzerland, and Austria. This is something that's come up a few times over the course of the podcast. We do have a lot of international listeners, of course, and Paramount Plus is rolling out worldwide. All the Trek is conglomerating. And so December we'll see Paramount Plus launching in those four countries, which means that's where they'll be able to find, you know, Strange New Worlds and Prodigy and Discovery and Picard, all of those shows. So I think a little slower than some people have liked, but that rollout does continue. So
yeah, it's interesting how long it's taking in certain places and sort of that uneven order of things. I remember back in the day when Canada wasn't going to get, I think it was Discovery at the same time as the States. And basically there was just such an uproar that they just switched it. I do think to some degree that this will kind of hopefully put everything in one place, which is nice. But at the same time, there's news also coming up that kind of contradicts that, but yeah. We'll get there in a sec. I just have to say, like, reading this, the only thing that really kind of came to mind, this is a fine article, but I wonder if, like, do they put like an Australian accent on like all the actors down there? I know they like dub for German and for French, but do they put that kind of like Captain's Log, star date, you know, like, I don't know.
That's a good question.
Klingons had a bunch of rhizoplites. Anyways.
Yeah, just change up some of the slang and stuff. Actually, I just recently learned, that reminds me, you know, the whole Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone versus Philosopher's Stone debacle.
Right.
I just apparently learned that the US version of that book and I think a couple others in the series, it wasn't limited to just the title. They actually Americanized some of the language in the books. So like jumpers became sweaters and stuff like that. I had no idea. That blew my mind.
Yeah. He took a draft of the potion. They would have said a drink in the American version.
Wow.
For sure. Yeah. Well, and it's funny because I have had kids who have read Harry Potter in the classroom and stuff like that. And they'll say, he took a drought. What's a drought? And I'm like, it's a draft. And they're like, still isn't helping. I'm like, okay, a draft means a drink. And they're like, why didn't they just say drink? And I'm like, England. Because England, they, yeah, like, they don't call, like, ballpoint pens, for our English listeners, I know what you call them. You call them biros. Mm-hmm. And that's the weirdest name for anything ever.
to me, that kind of blows my mind because I've learned so many of these little things from reading books as a young person and being exposed to different ways of saying things and looking at things. And I think that's important. So that kind of blew my mind. I didn't realize that that was so, they went to that much effort to Americanize some of that stuff.
Well, I mean, thinking of like quote unquote cultural protectionism, and I don't know if this is the time or place to be into this conversation on settler colonialism, but I think more than anything, cultural protectionism really isn't something outside of what we would see in other places like the CRTC in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the lengths that they would go to in that sense, I guess, though maybe like, wow, really? Not terribly jarring, especially, you know, if you were looking at, you know, kids who might not necessarily have that kind of vocabulary and may not have the same, there could be a resiliency issue there or something. It does make it a little more accessible, but what I would hope for is your kids who were, you know, avid readers and wanted to look into it more, that they could potentially read the English version, as in from England, and at least be able to kind of, you know, reflect on the comparative differences and stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, I guess to bring it back to the original discussion, I don't imagine that the Australian or British version would change some of the language in a Star Trek episode, but it's an interesting thing to think about.
here I went from like wanting to wonder what a Klingon sounds like if he was from like Queensland, and then we're like, meaningful conversation about the concept of learning in children and literacy. Anyway, back to Klingons going, "Aye, matey." Anyways, and also apologies for the terrible Australian accent. I don't make any bones. I'm not a good accent guy when it comes to Australia. So I know we just literally said that isn't it great that Star Trek is all kind of conglomerating into one place? Psych. Apparently, the TOS and TNG Star Trek movies are now going to be streaming on HBO Max starting in November. So if you're one of our American friends, I guess you're bouncing around again. I don't know what to say other than good gravy. When will this stop?
Yeah, this is ridiculous because, yeah, the beginning of this month, the beginning of October, the first 10 Star Trek films left Paramount Plus, much to the chagrin and annoyance of many a Star Trek fan in the U.S. And yeah, now they've resurfaced, or they're going to resurface. They're popping up on HBO Max. So you got to chase. It's like we're Khan chasing the Enterprise. Like, she tasks me. He tasks me and I shall have him. And, oh, they're there. They're over on HBO Max. Okay.
Or, and I love the end of the article where it's like, all right, you can just buy the set on Blu-ray and get it out of your system. Like, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love that the picture though, the little graphic on the front of the Blu-ray DVD set, the refit Enterprise going through kind of like its rainbowy, sparkly, sort of bursty look. And then they've got the Kelvin stuff underneath there, which is also lovely. But that refit,
isn't
I got to say,
gorgeous? It's yeah.
Still my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
Still my favorite. Always will be. But anyway, yeah, again, I guess it's nice that you can get them again. But this does drive home for me, like, I have the entire original series on DVD and will eventually compile TNG and DS9 for sure. I'm still holding out the possibility that we might get a DS9 Blu-ray, though, if they want to do some remastering. Wouldn't that be lovely?
Yeah.
Star Trek Strange New Worlds has been honored with a seal of authentic representation for Bruce Horrocks' character Hammer. Of course, there is a certain amount of disabilities that get acted out by people who don't necessarily always have those disabilities. And so I think that this is a really cool sort of piece. I'm just going to read a chunk of the article here that the Ruderman Family Foundation is an advocacy group that focuses on the advancement of people with disabilities. And their Ruderman Seal of Approval is awarded to television series and films featuring actors with disabilities in substantial speaking roles that show the commitment towards full inclusiveness in popular culture. I'll be honest with you, until I investigated this shortly into watching the first couple of episodes of Strange New Worlds, I didn't know the actor himself was actually blind.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really awesome that you know, we're getting characters played with, you know, abilities and disabilities that are relative to the actors who are playing them and being represented that way. I'm always a big proponent of representation doesn't mean emancipation. It doesn't mean, you know, that the oppressions that different people face when they have different types of disabilities like this, it isn't always representation that makes it better. But I see this kind of representation as it sets a watermark that I am very, very happy to see Star Trek once again right there on the cutting edge. Right, we have non-binary actors playing non-binary characters. We have blind actors playing blind characters, and they have speaking roles and personalities. And for Hemmer, Jeezum Crow, why can't we have him for another? Why did they kill them off?
Oh, like,
I'm glad they brought back Wilson Cruz, but they can't yada 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 Hemmer back. I just don't think that's possible.
Yeah, so. I know. It was funny because side tangent, I guess, but reading an article about that character and how he was constructed from the beginning to be a character that they wanted to kill off because they wanted to examine that, you know, have you sit with a character for a while and then have that happen. And they didn't anticipate him being so beloved. And how could you not with Bruce Horak's portrayal?
Authenticity.
Yeah. His authentic portrayal of this great character. And actually, shortly after Strange New Worlds started, I listened to an interview with Bruce Horak on CBC Radio here in Canada. represent. I'm wearing a CBC shirt. Weird. He's from Calgary, Alberta. And so local CBC Radio was interviewing him, and he just sounds like the coolest guy. And I mean, I really, really, I selfishly really want to meet him at a convention and just say to him how amazing that performance of that character was, and how, like, he's even not in a couple of the episodes leading up to his departure from the show, but the shows he was in, he made such an impact that he felt like such a huge part of that crew. And it was so heartbreaking when they ditched his character, I guess.
And, you know, for that, I really think that there's a bit of a, and it's a completely different scenario, but for our kind of characters who, or actors who might have played one character, I hope he kind of, I don't know, there's room for more blind characters. Mm-hmm. Or, I mean, I don't know, he can play a character who can see, it doesn't matter. He
Absolutely.
Can play that. Actors who do have 100% vision, they play blind people all the time.
Yeah.
So, you know, just do it the other way. Like, I mean, whatever. But also, like, I think about, like, Ken Mitchell and stuff coming back.
Absolutely.
A number of times in different roles and just crushing it every time. I mean, I don't know. Does Bruce have to go away? I mean, our Bruce doesn't necessarily go away. He'll come back.
Absolutely. So. Yeah, no, and they have said, I think the official thing that was said was that Bruce Horak is not finished with Star Trek, or Star Trek is not finished with Bruce Horak, something like that. They did say so. Yeah, I mean, I was thinking when they said that, like, oh, he'll show up on Strange New Worlds again as another character. And then I realized we've got four other shows too, so he could show up anywhere. That would be great.
Sky's the limit.
Would it be Hemmer's great, 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 whatever, however many times, 32nd century grandchild at some point.
There you go.
That'd be great.
Easy.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get one-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode of Positively Trek would not be possible without the support of those of you who have gone to patreon.com/positivelytrek and signed up to become a Patreon supporter of the show. Thank you all so very much for your donations. They truly do help bring this show to you each week. Thank you especially to our Constitution class supporters, Joyce Marin, Justin Ozer, Jim Stoffel, Jesse Earle, Dave Garcia, Rick Young, Paul D. Kinnear, and our associate producer for the month of October, Linda B. If you'd like to become a supporter of the show, go to patreon.com/positivelytrek. You can get perks such as early access to episodes, ad-free versions of episodes, exclusive content, shoutouts, associate producer credits, and much more. Once again, that's patreon.com/positivelytrek. Thank you all once again. And now, let's get back to the show.
So I think we can move on to our main feature, and that is the ghoulish and scary things that we have enjoyed in Star Trek, or when we've been given a genuine scare by the show one way or another. So not to put you on the spot, Dan, but what is the earliest, scariest moment in Star Trek for you?
Okay, well, my earliest, scariest moment in Star Trek, actually, it works both for when I saw it and when it came out as far as Star Trek goes. And I started watching Star Trek, the original series, obviously way after it had it originally aired. This was reruns, obviously, given my age. But the season one episode, Charlie X, and there is a moment in that episode that still kind of unnerves me because I remember how much it horrified me as a kid when there are some crew members who are laughing and Charlie Evans comes around the corner and says, "Stop laughing," and does his little head shake thing and walks away. And you hear kind of muffled screaming and a woman comes around the corner with no face screaming from behind this whatever is covering her face. And it gives me shivers to this day. That is a horrific moment for me.
You know, that is actually a scary moment that does. I saw it when I was, I don't know, in my 20s or something. And obviously effects from that time have sort of lost their luster, but I also had an original series jump scare as well for myself, and that was on the Corbomite maneuver when Balok was at first that scary alien mannequin.
When
it's just looking at you through the screen, and I was in the basement at my grandma and grandpa's house, and it was a semi-creepy basement. It actually wasn't as creepy as the basement I grew up in my house, but it was still a semi-creepy basement. When it's talking like this, and it's looking at you. The first look, I was like, "Good," and it scared the bejeebers out of me. Yeah. So that would have been my first sort of youngest scared moment. But as I got older, I found just the concept of the Borg to be the most terrifying. And it had to do, you know, like I've always had a bit of a zombie fascination, though I didn't quite totally get into the big Walking Dead sort of thing. I'm more of a Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead kind of earlier stuff kind of person. But I loved the idea of like the space zombie, right? And they're kind of, when they were first out, you didn't even know there was a queen or anything. They were just this kind of unknowable menace. And just the concept of them kind of lurking in the shadows of the galaxy always terrified me. And just the thought that they are unflinching, they have no remorse, they don't have, you can't reason with them, you can't do anything. They are completely driven and they will not stop until you've been assimilated. And then you just become part of that. And it's nice and freaky. And the body horror of it too, right? The idea that your body is getting augmented and like literally cells are being replaced by these nanoprobes and all this sort of stuff. And you lose your individuality therein. I think that's it's a remarkably scary concept. And I would have found it interesting to have been in the writer room when the Borg was being hatched as a species.
Yeah, that's a really good one because that's something that touches something fundamental about, you know, the theft of autonomy, the theft of self and control over your own life and destiny, right? So I think that touches something very primal in our brains. And I want to ask, what to you was like the prime example of the Borg striking fear in you? Like, what appearance of them would you say was the most terrifying?
Two moments, and I have to say it's a tie. And the first one is Riker commenting that they're being cut up like a Thanksgiving turkey or something like that.
They're carving us up like a roast. Yeah.
Yeah, they're carving it. And that was the point, is like, I remember watching that episode and being like, how do they get out of this? They're just literally just being divided and like segmented, right? It's that idea of like you're being pulled apart by wolves and you're still alive kind of feeling, right? Like they are just completely methodical, thorough as all get out, and they will rip you to pieces. The other one is from First Contact, and it was just a really great scene where as the Borg are getting shot by phasers and they've invaded the Enterprise E, and that one Borg turns the corner, the first one in front of him drops, and then he gets hit, and you just see the phaser go around him. He is now, and there is no moment, like there's no register, like, haha, you didn't get me. He just keeps walking. That scene right there, I just really, it sticks in my head.
Yeah.
I think if you can visualize that one.
Absolutely. Yeah.
When I find it, I'll jump around and point at it if we ever watch First Contact again.
For sure. My moment that just my heart sinks and I feel dread about the Borg is in The Best of Both Worlds, Part One, when Picard is taken and he's on the Borg ship. And Picard's power has always been his oratory, right? His ability to give a speech and make some point that is relevant and meaningful. And he's being held by two Borg drones, and he's standing in front of this chasm, and it's a disembodied voice speaking to him, where the Borg say, "You lead the strongest ship of the Federation fleet, you speak for your people," and he replies, "I have nothing to say to you, and I will resist you with my last ounce of strength. Strength is irrelevant. Resistance is futile. Your culture will adapt to service ours." And Picard counters with, "Impossible. My culture is based on freedom and self-determination." "Freedom is irrelevant. Self-determination is irrelevant. You must comply. We would rather die. Death is irrelevant." I was just like, oh, that's horrifying to me. That just like, no matter what he says, the Borg is like, that doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. We don't even factor that into our calculations.
Bleeping and? I don't think you understand. There's an analog, and this comes to the geeky childhood I had of the Transformers original animated movie, when Megatron starts trying to bargain with Unicron, and Unicron's like, "Give me a break, you tiny little peon. Like, perhaps I've misjudged you. Then continue on your way to oblivion. Like, I will end you right now." Mm-hmm. That omnipotence that they seem to have, I mean, does get lost for the sake of storytelling over time. And I mean, I would say, you know, iBorg definitely softens the Borg a little bit. And then most of the latter seasons of Voyager definitely humanize the Borg and even give them a species to be afraid of with species. I always get
8472.
And I was going to say 8571. 847, yeah. Species 8472, which again is scary, but I guess it just didn't quite land as much for me, their spookiness as opposed to the Borg. And I think it might have just been age and, you know, whatever else. But the Borg will always hold a place in my heart for something that terrifies me.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. There's actually one moment in season 7 of all things of Voyager where it's not even a Borg episode necessarily, but it's the final appearance of Q before he shows up in Star Trek Picard, where his son has put Voyager in a situation with the Borg and stuff. And Q shows up and snaps them away and rescues them. And he says to his son, and there's just something in his portrayal here, which is kind of played for laughs, but to me, there's like this undercurrent of something really scary there, where he walks up to his son and he says, "If the continuum has told you once, they've told you 1,000 times, don't provoke the Borg." And I'm like, are the Q kind of scared of the Borg? Like, that always just kind of sat with me a little bit. And I'm like, that felt a little real.
To some degree, I mean, analoging it to The Matrix, right? When, and spoilers for a 20-year-old movie, when Agent Smith does his form of assimilating, the one really nice lady, I forget who she was. She's like the Oracle or something, I think.
Yeah.
Anyways, she was the really nice lady who baked cookies. Anyways, and he takes her over, and then he just like gets this look, and he just starts like open mouth, like crazy laughing, like, you know, and it's because he suddenly has so much more knowledge and ability. So I think very much the same of the Borg, that if they assimilated a Q, a lot would become irrelevant in terms of resisting the Borg.
Oh, man, I need to, and I might have mentioned this in a previous episode, but I would love to point you and our listeners to one of the short stories in a Strange New Worlds volume. That was before it was the TV show. It was the short story contest that came out yearly for a few years there. And I can't remember which volume it's in. It might be 8, but somewhere around there. And it's called Alpha and Omega by Derek Tyler Attico. And in that story, Q shows up on the bridge of the Enterprise E, kind of bloodied and tattered and in rough shape. And Picard's like, Q, what the hell is going on? And Q says, the Borg have begun to assimilate the continuum. And it's just, ooh, it's a great story. I don't want to give any more away after that, but it's incredible. So,
oof.
Yeah.
Terrifying. So in terms of that as well, I'm always brought back to the very first episode of Voyager and that sort of abduction scene with Harry Kim.
Yeah.
Again, reminiscent of its time, right? That was sort of at the heyday of the X-Files, when those sort of like sidelong shots of a needle coming down into a person's belly button was sort of like something you saw a lot on nighttime television.
Mm-hmm.
And so it definitely, like, Caretaker has that piece to it, but that concept of again, taken against your will, abducted by some kind of higher intelligence that, you know, would have the same kind of machinations as, you know, biologists above a polar bear in a helicopter with a dart gun. But then also it could also be, you know, scientists from the 1800s, like Charles Darwin's Beagle expedition. You know what the one thing they don't tell you about the whole Beagle expedition and going and seeing all the cool iguanas and finches and stuff and albatrosses is they ate every single one of the animals they came across.
Yep.
and that's a thing too, that the aliens might do with us too, is they'd show up and be like, I wonder what you taste like, and just bite your head off, you know, like,
yeah.
There is that fear of something, again, so incredibly advanced. Like if a kid is playing in a fish tank and pulls a fish out, it doesn't know that it's like threatening its existence. Mm-hmm. And it might be the same kind of thing where, you know, if you get taken by something, even if they are well-meaning scientists, you might just be a specimen. And that's a scary thought.
Absolutely. And Star Trek's played with that one a few times, but Harry Kim, his scream when that needle goes in, I feel like, and I would love to be corroborated on this at some point, I feel like Garrett Wong was hired on the strength of his scream. Like, was that in the audition? Because that was an incredible scream.
I would probably scream that loud if someone tried to put something in my belly button. That's just a ugh.
Yeah, absolutely. Also, something else you said, I had heard this, and I don't know the source on this, but there was something about the Galapagos Islands turtles not making it into like a biology textbook for years and years and years, because apparently they were so delicious that no ship could make it back to London and still have a surviving, like, any of it left, basically, which is horrific. And I don't know if that's true, but that is something that I heard somewhere.
What?
Yeah.
They just couldn't resist. It's like this type of turtle is like human catnip.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
We're pretty horrific ourselves sometimes.
Yeah, we can be. I have one other piece that has always stuck in my head, and actually to this very day, I will fast forward it, is the transporter accident in the motion picture.
Ooh, yeah.
When they're like screaming weirdly and stuff, like, again, you can tell where I go with the horror and the scary. The body horror always is something that just just gets me, and it puts me in a very sort of ticklish position. Like, I have sat through watching that scene before with friends who've never seen the motion picture, but my dude, I gotta say, you know, one, if you're gonna go, that's the worst possible way. Like, yeah, they just came out like mush. Ugh, that's a scary thought. When technology fails you, right? Oh, when the thing you trust every single day to go from place to place, it's one of the safest forms of travel. Like, obviously, it's a play on air travel, but that's the point, right? When things go wrong, they really go wrong. Anyway, I'll shut up about that.
But... No, Enterprise. What we got back didn't live long, fortunately. Oh, shivers. Yep.
And the screams, those screams. Oof.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm right there with you on that one. When you were talking about outside forces using us as samples or using us as lab experiments kind of thing, I was thinking of Nagilam from season 2 of TNG, that kind of big disembodied head that was wanting to perform experiments on the Enterprise crew, which was always a little bit scary, but has a bit of that season 2 kind of campiness to it that, you know, kind of negates that a little bit. But I think Voyager actually did that concept really well as well. There was an episode in season 4, fairly shortly after Seven of Nine came on board, where there were aliens that were somewhat out of phase with us, with our crew, that were performing experiments, and Janeway was getting really irritable and yelling at everyone. And Seven of Nine's thing got adjusted by the doctor so she could see them, and she could see them inserting like probes into Janeway's head and all of this stuff that's going on around her that she can't let them know that she sees. And that was pretty terrifying. That was a chilling episode, I thought.
Well, the idea of that there's a level of helplessness there, right? Mm-hmm. And I mean, this is the problem with me not being a Voyager completionist. I don't have much more to say on this one because I haven't seen this episode, but
I'd recommend it.
What you talk about always gets, like, I am promising myself that before Halloween, I'm going to watch Nope.
I want to see that. Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's you and I make a plan for that then.
That'd be great. Yeah.
Just making plans on the podcast.
I should say just for our listeners as well, the Voyager episode is called Scientific Method. That's the name of the episode. Okay. So.
Yeah. I guess, like, in terms of the unseen, right? I think that's another sort of thing that there could be something interacting with you or interacting in your environment, but you're not able to see it. You're not able to register it, but it's able to register you. Mm-hmm. Is always kind of that feeling of the other, or maybe the feeling of being watched, is always kind of that freaky thing you kind of get in basements and everything like that. But to be, like, readily aware of it, that would be freaky. I guess I'm in a basement too right now, but my basement's actually wicked. I walk around here in the dark all the time. The only thing I worry about is stepping on toys.
Yeah, actually there's a bit of a smashed Lego thing right beside me. So that's about the scariest thing in the basement right now. Cause you don't want to step on that.
That's deadly danger. You got to get that Lego off the floor. Something bad could happen.
Oh yeah. Nope. Absolutely.
So I'd say, like, the last, like, for me, kind of scary episode is the concept of losing your mind. Like, much like the Borg, you lose your individuality and sense of self and all of those things that we hold dear and kind of basically become like a bug in a cube. The other really big one was Identity Crisis, a TNG episode, I believe from season 3, where Geordi becomes one of those kind of wild people creature things that had really good blacklight makeup, and and just his unfamiliarity, and I mean, kudos to LeVar Burton for his range, but his unfamiliarity and almost kind of serpentine movement and kind of how he changed altogether was always something that scared me too. It takes me back to the scene in Pinocchio way back in the cartoon, when the boys all turn into donkeys.
Oh yeah,
absolutely. And stuff, and just that fear of, again, being morphed into something irreparably different forever. And that's sort of the worry and the fear that I got from that episode, watching Geordi the way he was.
Yeah, that's a really good one. I remember in that episode, especially the scene on the holodeck, for some reason, that really chilled me, where he's reconstructing everything and there's a shadow that he can't account for. There's something casting a shadow and ooh.
Yeah. Like that. Yeah, exactly. And again, it's that an unseen present. Yeah. The shadow that he's just like, I don't know what to do with this thing. And like, again, I don't want to get like too wooey with the positive. I don't know what our concepts on ghosts are here and stuff, but speaking of,
as long as
parents,
they're not in candle form, we're good.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. No, none in candle form. No green mist, please. My parents' basement had some, I can't say it anyway, it's had some weird crap go down in it. And there was a time when I had a friend over, we were watching a movie, and things got weird enough that we had to evacuate the basement.
Wow.
And like, it just, things were getting too strange. There was, anyway, we'd gone upstairs and then we found out that somehow the basement bathroom faucet had been turned on full blast. And again, neither of us had gone to the bathroom or had been in there at all. And like, I had a cat at the time, but it was one of those old faucets that you had to like grab onto and pull towards you to make them go. Mm-hmm. So like, thumbs are essential to turning that thing on. A cat can't do that.
Yeah.
And so I went back down into the basement through the main part and into the laundry room across to the bathroom, shut this thing off. And like, I felt like I was walking through oatmeal. Like, it was just such a weird feeling down there. And so I started like speed walking back up the stairs, and then the little defiant streak in me stopped. And I stopped on the stairway and I just turned and looked. And in the basement next to the chair where I'd been watching the show was, I would say, like a good 6'5", maybe six, verging on 7 feet tall, dark, black, blacker than black being standing there, slender figure, kind of in like a, I was walking, but now you're in my way. Like, now you've spotted me walking kind of stance. Like, oh, I'm mid stride. And like, you've caught me walking after you. And I remember just shouting to my friend, get out the front door, get out, get out, get out. There's someone in the basement. And we got out of there. I don't know, man. I do not rule out hallucination. Like, definitely. Mm-hmm. I was amped. I was freaked out as it was. Maybe I saw something, and you know, now, you know, this was over a decade ago. And so obviously memories are constructions at this point. So who fully knows what happened in that moment really, but the way I remember it, it was that being that Jordy saw in the holodeck.
Oh man. Okay. Yeah. The hairs on the back of my neck are standing right up.
There's a ghost story for y'all.
Yeah. Excellent. Happy Halloween, everyone. Yeah. that's terrifying. One thing that's popped out to me while we've been discussing this is that the episodes of Star Trek that are set up to be the scary Halloween episodes aren't the ones we're bringing up on our list, which is interesting to me. Like the original series episode Cat's Paw, right? With witches and Halloween tropes, like, didn't particularly scare us. The Voyager episode that I can think of off the top of my head, which is called The Haunting of Deck 12.
Oh, yeah.
Where Neelix is telling the kids this kind of ghost story. There's some moments in it that are a little bit scary, but like as an episode as a whole, I don't think of it as particularly scary. I guess the one thing I would pull from that episode was the entity that's inside Voyager was speaking through Majel Barrett's computer voice. And there's one point where it's trying to take over the ship and Janeway says something like, you'll have to kill me first. And you hear Majel Barrett's voice, acknowledged. And the air starts escaping from the room. That was a bit of a freaky moment. But
that was
generally
funny.
Speaking, like, not what I would consider a terrifying episode.
I think you're absolutely right in the sense that Star Trek is at its best when it's not trying. It just is doing. And mm-hmm. its horror is not the same as the horrors you'd get from, you know, Alien or Event Horizon or, you know, a million other like monster flicks and stuff like that that are out there. Star Trek horror, Star Trek spooky, scary stuff is always going to be psychological. It's always going to get in your head. It's always going to put you in these kind of existential crises and make you, you know, question what's morally good or bad or all of these sorts of things. Or like, it'll be relatable too, right? Like, some people balk at Picard's, you know, hatred of the Borg in First Contact and stuff, and he wasn't quite the same. But like, post-traumatic stress doesn't work in a straight line. Mm-hmm. It, you know, he could feel good about something one day, and then, you know, over time, obviously things start to affect him more negatively and whatnot. So I do really much agree with you in the sense that Star Trek is at its best and at its scariest when it's giving us what it can do inside of its universe that it's created. It has to get in your head. It can't just be a jump scare or something. It's got to be something more.
Absolutely. And no, you know, green sex candle ghosts. That doesn't scare anybody. At least not in the way that we want to be scared, I guess.
Yeah. It scares you in the sense that, I don't know. It scares you in the way that you're like, wow, the writers were like, this is the perfect idea.
So we're going with this one, huh? Okay.
Yeah, okay. Perfect.
That's a scary moment.
Yeah. Well, I think that wraps it up for this week's conversation. We've got some interesting ones coming down the pipe for you all. We've got some episodes in the works that I'm quite excited to get underway. And I promise, and I'm making myself a post-Halloween resolution, that I'm going to be more on just the Positively Trek Facebook page itself. Ladies, gentlemen, non-binary friends, for the love of goodness, I am just not a social media guy and I'm doing my absolute best, but I do want to spend more time chatting with you all, because everywhere else on social media, other than Star Trek places and other mild positive places, there's not a lot of happy out there. So it's nice to have the crowd, even just to read posts and stuff. It's nice to see people in good moods talking about good things.
Definitely. Yeah. And we do have a good crowd there, a good group that generally is pretty wonderful. You know, if you want to join the Positively Trek discussion group on Facebook, you just have to answer some questions and agree to the rules. And it's a very welcoming crowd. So
lovely human beings all. Well, with that, I think we will bid you farewell for the week. This is Barry DeFord signing off for Positively Trek with Mr. Dan Gunther.
Absolutely. And we'll see you again in our next episode. So happy Halloween, and live long and prosper. And you know, let's see some great Star Trek costumes out there.
Yeah, that would be cool. If there are people in the Positively Trek group who are planning on trekking out their costume. Actually, you know what, whatever. If you want to even just show, like, if you've got a costume you're proud of and you want to show it off, I would love to see it. I will be in my 1960s TOS Season 3 Captain Kirk captain's outfit, because, like I said, I paid good money for it. So I'm going to wear it. All right, well, with that, thank you very much, everyone, for listening, and... Whoa, sorry, I just had a cat jump on me. All right. Thank you very much, everyone, for listening, and stay positive.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only, not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get 1-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.